This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Are you looking for answers about someone and you've hit a dead end? There is an online tool that can help you locate almost anyone within minutes. Truthfinder can help you locate almost anyone in the U.S. with fast, comprehensive public records background checks. You can confidentially search by phone number, address, name, email, and more. Go to truthfinder.com to get answers to your questions now. That's truthfinder.com.
We are live at the Lost Rhino Brew Pub in Ashburn, where Nats fans are getting ready for opening day and a brand new campaign in Major League Baseball. We are just one day away from Nats game number one at Nationals Park of 2025 against the Philadelphia Phillies. And with opening day looming, thanks to our friends out here at Lost Rhino, we wanted to celebrate the start of a new Nats season and them dropping the Hittin' Dingers IPA by having the voices of Nats baseball, Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler alongside, to kick off the season. Gentlemen, the silence is ending. It's time to turn up the volume a little bit.
Yeah, we've been working on ending it for about a month, 6 weeks.
I was joking with Tress Way, so the Commanders punter was out here with me earlier, and we were both marveling. His brother-in-law is Bryce Terang of the Milwaukee Brewers, about just how much baseball is played. Spring training, as an endeavor, I understand, Jags, how important it is to get everybody ramped up. The amount of hours those guys put in and work on the backfields and games, it does seem like they could do a little bit less and probably still get ready.
Well, it's all about the pitchers. Huh? That's why spring training is so long, because they ramp up from, you know, one inning now. It used to be you throw two or three innings in your first game. Now it's one inning, and you build up to about 90 pitches. Back in the day, we always like to tell the story, Don Sutton, rest in peace, who used to be one of the Nationals analysts who worked with Bob Carpenter. He made the Hall of Fame 300-game winner. He'd say, well, you know how I knew I was ready for the season? When I threw a complete game in spring training.
Yeah, the Dodgers used to make their pitchers throw.
If anyone threw a complete game in spring training now, they would fire the manager on the spot. So, I mean, these guys build up to 90 pitches, and they go down to 70, and they'll throw four innings opening day. But it's all about the starting pitchers. For us, the broadcasters, we did 14 games in Florida. I was ready after two. Just give me one rundown play, one double in the gap, let's go. Those games are hard.
Well, it's
funny. Because the fifth inning comes, and then it's the second unit. And they don't tell you the eight different guys.
Oh, yep.
And then Davey Martinez, you know, when it was Dusty or Matt Williams, you know, if you were the shortstop and you went in for C.J. Abrams, you bat in C.J. Abrams' spot. Now the batting order, I mean, you could just you throw a dart, yeah, flip a coin. You don't know who's going to bat in what spot until they actually come up. So you can't write them in the book because – you know, depending if the seven hitter made the last out, he could put someone in the eighth spot, who's the left fielder, and he's going to bat in the catcher spot. So after two of those games, I'm like, let's get this started for real.
Charlie, you're midseason form, two games in. Well, how many do you need?
A game and a half of
It's funny you guys say that because we complain all the time. Like, I want more televised spring training games. We only get a couple. It's ridiculous.
Actually, then, this year they had nine. It was like a record. Or it would have been nine, but we got rained out.
They're calling them from Towson, right? But that's a whole other story. But I want to watch the team, and I want to listen to the team. So while you guys, I get it, you're like, these are tough and a grind. But I want every game available.
I get it. The thing for us, though, the last 2 years really helped us see all of the talent coming in the organization. You know, last year, the guys who would be the call-ups from minor league camp to fill out a game and get in the 7th, 8th, and 9th, these are the guys that are in major league camp from the beginning. And some of them, of course, came up and made the club last year, James Wood and Dylan Cruz. A guy like DJ Hurst, we'd never seen. We didn't even see him in spring training. Or Mitchell Parker. They weren't in big league camp. You know, so it helps us learn the organization and helps us get to know these young players. And they are kind of all coming as a group. And they're dead serious about what they saw as a group to be that next wave of national
players. So let's talk about that, because as we're on the precipice now of a brand new campaign, it does feel like when you talk to certainly Davey or Mike Rizzo, and even now players, the narrative is it's time to stop playing around. It's time to push this thing forward. They are essentially saying the rebuild is over.
Yeah, I heard you talking about this when I was driving in, that you thought, well, maybe this is a little like a year premature.
To me, that would have been my messaging next year. Only because if you're telling me this week, like, we're now here, we've arrived, then you're telling me, okay, it's over 500 and we're competing. I think this is the 77-win season if things go well. Next year is the 85-win season. But I like that the players are going, if you're Dylan Cruz, I'm a winner. I'm here to win. James Wood's going, I'm a star. And so they're confident, I want them to be, but I don't know that the reinforcements that were necessary to kind of put them over the top were added, but I do like the feel of this ball club. They seem to be very much confident that the rebuild has ended.
Yeah, I think Davey wants them to feel like they could go out and beat anybody. If you pitch well, play good defense, I think their offense is going to be better, so don't sell yourself short.
You got to play better baseball, too. I mean, like last year's team, on paper, or at least watching them on the field, I thought was better than the year before, yet they ended up with the same record. Well, why was that? I mean, they made way too many outs on the bases, had defensive miscues. Like, if they play good, solid baseball, I think there's talent up there to make that run to be 500. And if you're 500 with now the six postseason teams in each league, you're in the discussion. You're not going to make it at 81, but if you're at 83, 84 wins, you're in the discussion later in the season. And I think that improvement can be made just by playing better baseball. And for a lot of this, that's what they all focus on in spring training. You know, 27 outs defensively. Don't give anybody extra outs. You know, we want to be aggressive. I mean, this team's DNA is to be aggressive on the bases, but there's a fine line between aggressive and reckless. And too often they went to the wrong side of that line last year. This spring, for the most part, I think that's been better. You know, for 2 weeks, it felt like they didn't make any errors. Then they had this kind of stretch where they made about six errors in two games and had, you know, a bunch of outs in the bases. It's like, oh, that's the team we saw last year. Then they cleaned it up again as it got toward the last week to 10 days of spring training. So I think if they play better baseball, they're going to be, just by definition, better than last year. Because last year was a step sideways. I mean, they went from, you know, 109, 107 losses, and they win 71. Well, last year you hoped to get to 77. They took that big step sideways. Now you'd like to make that jump. You know, it's easy to get the first 15-win jump. This next 10 to 12-win jump, this is the hard jump to get to that, across that 500 level.
Yeah, and you got to look at a whole season. I mean, they were much better in the first half in every phase, defensively and pitching-wise. I mean, their ERA that was over 5.
How much of that is that they sold off some veterans?
Good part of it. I mean, they got rid of their 2 and 3 hitters in the lineup.
Right. And the two of their top three relievers. Yep.
Right. But even before that, they had started to slide in July, you know, from the way they played in the first half of the year. The ERA in mid-June was in the 3.7, 3.7.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. At T-Mobile, we'll give you four free 5G phones and four lines for only $25 per line per month with eligible trade-ins. And no, it's not a contest. It's every day for a limited time. Everyone's a winner on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay. Up to $830 off each phone via 24 monthly bill credits plus taxes, fees, and $10 device connection charge. For well qualified customers, contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credits stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. T-Mobile.com.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
1-8, you know, and then you took a half, you know, a half of a run up as far as their ERA was concerned, even before they were trading away people. And your defense slipped in the second half of the year. I mean, when you talk about, like, key players, C.J. Abrams was an all-star. He had a great first half, and he had a miserable second half. He wasn't as good defensively in the second half of the year. I mean, this is a guy, and you got to remember, he's still only 24, right? So, but this is the time at that position, that kind of player is the type of player who's maybe your most talented player on the field needs to have a full season. And that's the hardest thing about being a major league player. Dusty Baker used to talk about you can have two great months or three really good streaks during the year, and the rest of the time you're just average. And if that's okay, then you've had a good year. But you need a bunch of guys to have those streaks and average times. And, you know, if you have a lot of guys, especially key spots, you know, that fall off, your leadoff batter and Abrams, I handed him that job last year. And so I think the second half of the year for him was, you know, first half was a step up. Second half was a step, I'll use your phrase, Dave, sideways.
Charlie, you know, Slows, Dave Jagler. You'll be hearing them all season long on Nationals radio right here on 106.7. The Fan, opening day slated for 4:05 tomorrow. There's no rain in the forecast, which I thought was against the rules for opening day around here. But it sounds like it's going to be a little chilly and otherwise beautiful, and we are ready for baseball.
I just want to tell people who just saw me take a drink on YouTube. We have liquid death that looks like beer. Liquid death is mountain water that looks like a beer can.
Well, two things. One, I think those waters in the beer cans are the coolest thing in the world. The liquid death. I love those.
Yes.
Two, you are over 21, so you are allowed to be drinking.
Right. But
you don't have to explain to anyone what you're doing.
But I'm doing it on the radio, which makes
our great friend was the late, you know, Bob Uecker, and he passed away in the offseason, sadly. And he, you know, occasionally might tilt back a Miller Lite, you know, but that's, you know, generally that thing is frowned upon. So liquid death, we give two thumbs up.
Well, speaking of Bob Uecker, you were mentioning the base pads and the mistakes last year. So the Nats and the Brewers were the only two teams in the sport that stole 210 bases. And the Nationals stole 223, the most in the major leagues. But they ran into 73 outs. So the 223 steals, unfathomably impressive. Record. Obviously, the rules were changed. It helped them. But they ran into 73 outs. And if you can clean that up and you can cut down on the errors, that's how you're going to kind of around the edges.
Sometimes two on
issues.
One play.
Yes. They had some of those, unfortunately. But how about the offseason? What did we think? What were your expectations going in? And how do you feel like they were able to accomplish some of the goals?
Yeah, I think they plugged some holes. I mean, I think everyone kind of assumed that this might be the year that they went out and signed that Jason Worth contract. There was no Jason Worth contract, but I think, you know, from working at the margins, undoubtedly this team is better. I mean, they were, you know, kind of gaping holes last year in the corner infield. First base was a hole. Third base was a hole. They filled those. You know, DH was not good. You know, you're supposed to designate a hitter. They didn't have very good designated hitters. So now you're hoping that Josh Bell can be that guy. And, you know, right now, you know, the kind of the wild card for this team, and this team's going to need starting pitching. We talked about the fall off last year. I mean, a lot of these guys, be it Parker, Hers, Irvin, were pitching their first full big league seasons. You know, obviously tough news on DJ, but they have a veteran pitcher in Michael Soroka. Now, Soroka, when he was healthy, was a dominant pitcher. That was some time ago. He's battled a lot of injuries. Changed his repertoire. It's not the same guy. When he was an all-star with the Braves, he was a sinker slider guy. Now he's more of a four-seam guy up in the zone, mixes in a curveball down, and really felt that that repertoire changed his career last season as a reliever for the White Sox. His numbers were dominant. A lot of teams wanted to sign him as a reliever. He wanted to be a starter. The Nationals signed him. He came out gangbusters here in the spring, maintaining his velocity, mid-90s, later into his outings. So, I mean, starting pitchers were going for $15 million. Charlie Morton got $15 million. Scherzer got $15 million. Verlander got $15 million. They got Soroka for $9 million, and they got Trevor back for $7 million. So you basically, for those two guys, you spent on what one pitcher would cost, you got two guys. We know what Trevor did last year. Soroka, if he can be a big win, that could be the signing of the year for this team, if he can stay healthy. He was that impressive early in the spring.
Yeah, he was one of the marquee additions. I would throw into that group Nathaniel Lowe, who they're going to start at first base every day. He's going to hit in the heart of the order. They acquired him for a non-closing reliever in lefty Robert Garcia. Josh Bell is back, who's going to DH every day and maybe air it out to try to hit for some more power because they need home runs after only hitting 135, second fewest in baseball last year. And then if you want to throw in Paul DeJong, who's going to start at third, or you know, they have three relievers they signed in free agency. Of those additions, though, who do you think is going to make the biggest impact in terms of the offseason splashes, if we want to call them that?
Well, I think you'd want it to be Nathaniel Lowe at first base because that's a position where the Nationals have just had a revolving door for several years, not produced a lot of offense from first base. And you can say the same thing, you know, even at third base. They've gone through several people the last few years and have not gotten a lot of production out of that. They did with Candelario, came on and eventually netted you a trade that got you a couple of players, including DJ Hers. But outside of Candelario, that's been, you know, a dormant position offensively. So DeJong can hit for power. He will strike out. He doesn't normally hit for terrifically high average. Right now we're still waiting to see.
He can play third, though.
Yeah.
We hadn't seen him play third before because
right.
He was with a shortstop his whole career. He can play third.
Yeah. I get the sense after just getting back from West Palm, you guys tell me if you disagree, I think he's going to play way more than people think, too.
We're not even sure Jose Tena makes the team.
Correct.
If they option Tena, then DeJong's your everyday third baseman.
But I think even if Tena makes the team,
yeah.
I left West Palm. I should say this. I got there thinking maybe it's a platoon situation. I think like he's going to play 18 of the first 19 games.
Yeah, I mean, look at the last two or three lineups in the exhibition season.
Right.
DeJong was in it.
And one of them was at shortstop. One of the games he started at shortstop in the last weekend. Yeah.
And he's played good defensive shortstop in his career. You mentioned Soroka. The one guy we haven't covered then, because we've talked Lowe and DeJong, is Josh Bell. I had a good conversation with him at camp where he basically said, when I was here before, I didn't have to necessarily hit a ton of home runs because we had guys on the team that could drive the ball. Remember, even though it didn't work out that well, like Nelson Cruz or Soto. And his point is they brought me in here and basically told me that we need some power. Do you think he tries to maybe air it out a little bit?
That's you know, he doesn't have to worry about playing first base unless it's, you know, once every week or two where they give Lowe a day off to play some first base. That's what he's talked about. Not so much concentrating on hitting for a higher average, but trying to, you know, come up in situations with men on base. The thing the Nationals lacked the most was the extra base hit with a couple of men on base, not even the home run. As you said, the White Sox were the only team that hit fewer home runs than the Nationals.
Yeah, and the White Sox are the only team below you in any category.
Right. But
I got to tell you, it's like your last because they were not a big league team last year.
But how about just the ball in the gap with a couple of men on base where you score a couple of runs? Not even necessarily hit it out of the park. You need some extra base hits with men on base to score runs.
Well, you made a good point. I mean, the corner infield and the corner outfield the last few years, no wonder where you're so low in slug. I mean, that's where those guys come from, Jackson.
Right.
They haven't had the first baseman, the third baseman, and they've been trying to develop, haven't really had the corner outfielders that were boppers either.
Yeah, I mean, you were down there, and you saw that the game that James Wood had and how he was swinging, man. He had a slow start to the spring. For folks who weren't listening to all our, you know, early broadcasts, he wasn't on the field like the first week to 10 days of the spring. He had kind of a lingering left leg issue, some quad tendonitis. He had an MRI in the offseason. You were like, oh, man, this could be a problem. The first day, he just starts hitting line drives. I don't know that I've ever been as fooled calling a home run as one he hit in Jupiter. It was against the Marlins. It was a line drive that I thought was going to be caught by the left fielder. And it just kept going, and it never sank.
It would
and
not have hit the roof
the left
in this
field,
bar.
The left fielder thought he was going to catch the ball.
Yeah.
Then he turned to play the carom. Then the ball went over the fence, hit the back wall of the bullpen, and bounced. So it's a clear fence. It looked like he was on the warning track. He was rounding first, ready to jog into second for a double. He didn't know he had hit a home run.
It looked like it went through the wire fence. That's how hard he
was. Well, it was a 16-degree launch angle. There was something like three home runs hit with a 16-degree launch angle all last season.
Shtick aside, the video of that home run, it looked like it could have soared the entire way in this building.
Yeah.
Like, it would not have hit the roof right. of Los Rhino. It was crazy.
Yeah,
but
low,
what he's capable of, and we'll get to him when we break down the lineup, I'd say that was my biggest takeaway from my time in West Palm. As excited as I am and have been for James Wood, the conversations you have with Nats people about him, it's hard not to just get chills at the possibilities. Like, we're talking, if he reaches his ceiling, they think it's perennial MVP candidate.
Right.
Like
mm-hmm.
like a Judge, Stanton in his prime. You know, Soto's a different beast with the approach and the average and the walks. But
he's got a good approach. I mean, from day one last year, plate discipline was there.
Absolutely. I guess I mean more of strikeout, swing and miss, whatever. But he's just big, so there's going to be a little bit of that.
Yep.
But he's got it, to your point, a great batter's eye. One of the other problems, I guess the elephant in the room for the Nats trying to turn a bit of a corner here, is that the division is ridiculous.
Right. I mean, you almost can't even worry about the division. You just worry about how you play right now and then see where you are as you get into the season, because you already know what those teams are.
Who do you guys think will be the best team?
I want to talk about that first. That's a fair point. The difference between when the Nationals climbed that hill the first time from the 08-09 losing 100
wasn't
games,
good.
The division was terrible back then, so it was much easier to go from the bottom to the top.
Now you guys,
as they basically did in a 2-year period.
Right.
Now you've got to go through, you got to go a rung at a time almost, because you have three legitimate heavyweights in your division. Again, it's a little different schedule. You only play them 13 instead of 19 times. You have the third wild card. So in theory, if you play good enough baseball against everybody else and, you know, hold your own against them, you could have all the postseason. You could have four teams out of five go from the postseason. So you do have to worry about yourself.
And even with their record last year being the same, their record against teams in the division was better last year than it was atrocious before that.
So what do you mean?
Their record against the National League East.
So last year they dominated the Marlins. The Marlins had just eaten their lunch for 2 years in a row.
Right.
And the Nationals actually won the season series from the Braves, which was the first time since, I believe, 2017 or 2018 that they had won the season series from the Braves. But then the Phillies and the Mets dominated them. So it was almost like a wash. They were just slightly under 500 in the division. If you could somehow play close to 500 against the top three and still dominate the Marlins, then you're over 500 in the division. Do well against everybody else, you're in the mix.
Let's take the Nats out of the equation, because you guys are calling their games. Of the other three and the likely front runners, who do you think ends up winning the East?
The Phillies, to me, are still the favorite with the pitching they have at the top of their really through their starting rotation. Their bullpen is a little bit different at the back end this year. Kind of traded pitchers with Toronto to get their closer. But, you know, if they're healthy, offensively, position by position, they're the same team coming back that's just a year older. So it'll be interesting. I on paper, position by position, to me, they're the best team in the division.
Yeah,
they have fewest question marks.
I'm there, too. They added the Marlins' best pitcher. He's starting game two against the Nationals. And Mr. Lizardo, one-time Nationals draft choice, traded for Sean Doolittle. So Lizardo's starting game two. So they're deep, but their window is starting to, you know, they got a lot of expiring contracts this year.
Real
Muto,
obviously, free agent.
The Braves are probably in a better position long term because they have everybody signed, and the Mets have a player signed for a long period of time too. But yeah, I think for this year, the Phillies are probably the biggest threat to the Dodgers in the National League.
The Braves are my sneaky play, although I do think there's a real chance for some regression in the rotation. You got to keep Sale healthy.
Is Lopez going to do that again?
No way.
I'm not thinking that.
Spencer Schwellenbach's going to be a monster.
Yeah,
but losing Freed?
That's big, no doubt, but I think they get Strider back, hopefully. I don't know when he comes back. But
yeah, soon. He's been pumping gas in spring training.
Absolutely. So, they've got some coming, some going, but the lineup's going to be way better. Acuna will be back 6 weeks or so from now. Albies got hurt last year. Harris got hurt. Riley was down. So I think they're being slept on a little bit.
Yeah, Murphy's down now.
Correct. Let's get to the lineup and some questions on the offense. We'll go through Abrams needing to bounce back, the outfield structure with the kids in left and in right. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler, we are previewing opening day tomorrow in Washington, D.C. We are at the Lost Rhino Brew Pub on your home for Nationals baseball. This is Grant and Danny on The Fan.